three of Amazon's top 10 best-selling books of 2015 were coloring books. The Secret Garden and Enchanted Forest coloring books, produced by Joanna Basford, have together sold more than 13 million copies worldwide. A new trend? Nope.
For those who fancy coloring books.
In the Kennedy era, adult coloring books were chart toppers. Barbra Streisand's 1962 hit, My Coloring Book, riffs on the fact that sales of adult coloring books reached 1 million in 1962.
This is the heart that thought he would always be true.
But where today's coloring books are marketed as therapeutic, stress-relieving creativity engines, the coloring books of the 60s were decidedly more subversive. Laura Marsh filled in the details recently in The New Republic. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I have before me what I think is a fairly typical contemporary offering. This was given to Mythali, the segment's producer, for Christmas. It's called Finding Peace, and it's full of swirls and flowers and birds and aphorisms. Just flip to any page and read the aphorism.
Yeah, this one looks very relaxing. It says, sometimes you can find peace of mind by transferring yourself to different situations. They're just reminders to stay calm. And that has a really lovely picture of a bird flying mm-hmm. through a rainstorm.
Mm-hmm. So, what made the 60s coloring books so subversive?
Well, most of these books took on subjects that people were starting to criticize very vocally in the 60s and question. So corporate culture, the military, the government, sex, the hipster lifestyle. There wasn't really anything that you associate with the 60s that someone didn't make up a kind of satirical coloring book about.
Where did the idea come from?
So the first coloring book came out at the end of 1961, and it was a joke between two copywriters at a Chicago ad firm. Like any good disgruntled employees, they were thinking up the most creative ways to make fun of their bosses and their jobs. So they made up this book called The Executive Coloring Book.
Mm-hmm.
And this book had pictures of an ad guy going through the stages of his day. Like, this is what daddy does when he goes to work. So the first panel, he's in his boxers, putting on his suit, and he says, this is my suit, color it gray, or I'll lose my job.
That was the first one.
That was the first one. It was a huge hit. The first printing sold out in the first month, and people started copying it in Chicago and New York, and there were, like, cottage industry operations out of Dallas. I think that's where the John Birch Society coloring book was
yeah,
made.
Yeah, that wasn't produced, I assume, by the John Birch Society?
No, it was specifically for the purpose of making fun of them.
And the JFK coloring book was a big one.
That was probably the next breakout hit. It spent 14 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, and it made fun of JFK.
So the target of these coloring books were people who regarded themselves as cool literati types?
They were for young professional people who thought of themselves as a little bit outside the common stream. You know, we don't like bureaucracy, we don't like corporate culture, but we probably still pick up a paycheck in some of those fields.
It commodified their dissent.
Exactly.
The question that isn't answered in anything I've seen, were the books colored?
Well, the instructions in the books are often very metaphorical. So the executive coloring book said, color me gray, but that was pretty unusual. Most often they would say, color it naive or color him stupid. Or like Barbara Streisand, color me lonely. That's not an indication to me that people were actually coloring. But mm-hmm. probably more important is that sales of crayons didn't go up.
How long did the trend last?
It was pretty much done by the time Barbra Streisand's record hit the airwaves. By 1963, I found newspaper articles where people were like, oh, thank God, the coloring book trend's over.
You postulate that one of the things that killed off the coloring book so abruptly in its first incarnation were the very people who created it to begin with, Madison Avenue ad execs.
someone made a Madison Avenue coloring book making fun of Madison Avenue in this similar vein.
Making fun of themselves.
Also their bosses and their clients.
Ah.
When it hit New York City, clients started to complain and they were basically told if you do it again, you're out.
One thing I found fascinating was that even though the coloring book was starting to crash as a cultural phenomenon, somebody found a health application for it. You saw an August 1963 piece saying that doctors were finding coloring books were useful diagnostic tools.
Yeah, I found that a worrying article. There was a doctor who had made a 12-page booklet, and he thought that he could diagnose basically any mental disorder by seeing how people colored in these squiggles. So it was like a Rorschach test, but probably even less scientific.
I'm just liking the parallel that now we see them as healthful, and back then they were political mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're mostly healthful, but they're also somewhat political. I saw two Trump books. One is called the Trump Off-Color Coloring Book. There's also a Hillary coloring book, which makes her look kind of witchy. And there's a Ted Cruz coloring book. These are much blunter instruments and not terribly funny.
I think they're just less unexpected. I think we live in a culture now where making fun of people who are in power is a pretty normal thing to do. And in the 60s, this was a completely new form of making fun of people.
The ones that are used therapeutically today, the very best ones, truly are beautiful. So it relieves stress?
It's a pretty relaxing thing for people to do at home. That was a really big contrast with the 60s because coloring now is about kind of getting away from it all, forgetting how terrible things might be or just how boring, mundane, rather than criticizing them and trying to do something about them.
Hachette Book Group is releasing a new series of books for adults, Connect the Dots.
I don't think that has the same appeal. No one liked connecting the dots as a kid. I've never met a child who's like, oh, I just need to get back to my dot connecting here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Laura Marsh is a story editor at The New Republic.
Coming up, the novelization of movies is an underappreciated art form. Say its practitioners.
This is On the Media.